Fill to capacity. Crazy good stories and timely topics. Podcast for people too stubborn to quit and too creative not to make a difference. Inspiring, irreverent, and informative. Stay tuned. Hi, I'm Pat Benincasa, and welcome to Fill to Capacity. Today's episode, A Woman from Elsewhere. My guest is Vesna Kittleson, artist, professor, and colleague. Vesna Krečić, thank you, was born in Bosnia and Herzegovina and grew up in Split, S-P-L-I-T, in communist Yugoslavia, which is now Croatia, during the reign of Josip Tito. It's important to note that Croatia was never under the Soviet Union. In 1948, Tito broke off relations with the USSR. It had its own form of socialism, and it differed from the Soviet model. In Yugoslavia, there was exposure to Western culture, music, and movies. Vesna received her law degree from the University of Split in 1969. The University of Split allowed Vesna to study at Newnham College at Cambridge University in England, where she met and married David Kittleson, who was a PhD student there at the time. But at Cambridge, Vesna did a 360-degree turn and decided to study art in the United States. She attended University of Minnesota, where she earned her bachelor's degree in studio arts and her master's degree in design. She lives and works in Minneapolis. Now, Vesna's work is in museums worldwide. Walker Art Center, Weissman Art Museum, Yale University Art Library, Getty Research Institute, and that's only to name a few. There is a beautiful book of Vesna's work called Synthesis, Lost and Found in America. She is a naturalized American and lives between Split, Croatia, Cambridge, England, and Minneapolis, Minnesota. You could almost say she is a tri-located citizen of the world. Well, welcome, Vesna. So nice to have you here.
Thank you. What a perfectly correct introduction. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Now, you know I'm excited to have you here between all the emails and our Zoom conversation. So I have really, I'm looking forward to this. So I'd like to start with you growing up in communist Yugoslavia. Can you share some memories, especially how it shaped your early life?
Yes, you know, it was quite a significant way of lifestyle that I didn't know or noticed until I really went to England and came to the United States. Then the contrast became very obvious and clear for me to see how I actually grew up before I went elsewhere. And that's why I'm a woman from elsewhere, you know.
Yes.
What I think obvious differences were is that I lived in a system that was top down rather than, you know, everything was ordered from above and the rest of us had to sort of accept it. And it was in very few layers. I mean, it was rather crude system, you know. What was noticeable is that for Croatia, and you were so correct, being a different from other parts of communist states was in the fact that we had a lot of tourists even then. So we could see people from other places. You know, we could see them in our streets, in our beaches. And so that was one very abstract but relevant connection with the outside world.
Well, that leads me to my next question. I think you've segued beautifully into it. How did exposure to the tourists, the Western culture, music, and movies influence your perspective on art and the world?
Well, it is interesting because I think it was my case and those people who were naturally creative to actually take something from watching people from elsewhere, you know, and thinking, how do they live? What is their life? So there is so much that is imagination. Because, of course, you don't connect with tourists who come for 4 days or 5 days, and then when you're a child in particular. But I was always sort of like those people who observe streets, sit and watch people walking by and thinking about what kind of culture do they carry inside of themselves. But that is because I was a curious and continue to be curious as an old person. Yeah. It doesn't matter. You're born to be curious, you know?
That's right.
So I belong to that category of people, and I'm always feeling that there is always something out there beyond what I can see. So mm-hmm. It was that kind of connection. It was very abstract. But I think based on curiosity about what is over there,
yeah,
or where I am not.
So it's interesting that you studied law at the University of Split, and then you went to Cambridge on the idea of studying law and the English language there, but instead you changed your focus to art and you studied in the U.S. Why art? What inspired you to make that change?
You know, not being really with my parents, because they were concerned about how will I survive.
Yeah.
You know, art was not on the table of possibility.
Yeah.
And so when I was away, it was kind of an unstoppable force. And I was horrible at it. I mean, I never had a class in art, really.
Mm-hmm.
I just was somebody who did art in school when I was a young child, and it was noticed.
Ah.
That's all that happened. And then law school meant no connection, but I did dream of becoming an international law, traveling and collecting art. I never thought that I would be an artist, but I did think that I would very much connect with art.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my side plan, you know, the, mm-hmm. to be a collector and travel and pick up things and bring them home. And
now,
so
I have to ask, did you defect or was the Yugoslav government okay with you doing this?
You know, I think that I was one of first 100 or 200 people who were given permit to go away. And my permit was based on the fact that I wanted to practice international maritime law and that I needed English language as a base to be able to read documents or make documents, which was crazy because you have to study that for many more years,
yeah.
Not just 3 months like I was, or 6 months, you know. But you never know when you're young, you know, you think you can do it.
Yep.
So I asked to go to Cambridge and they gave me permission. Now, the chief of the police in Split was our neighbor, and we were not close neighbors, but he knew who we were. And so I think that that helped me get that permit to go because we were sort of well-behaved citizens in communism, you know.
Yep.
So I think because my parents were acceptable to him, he maybe okayed this, you know. It's how we think. We don't know, but we think that's how I got that permit. Hmm. So I was one of very first early people who were given permission to go out. But later, maybe 10 years later, communist state under Tito still opened up borders. So actually, it was desired for Croatians to leave. So there are fewer of us in that beautiful land that Croatia mm-hmm. is, you know. So that the fewer people, the better. And so that's, you know, how I think I was given this permission to go.
Interesting. Now, I want to shift gears a little bit. I am mindful that our listeners from around the world may not be familiar with art historical references. So with that said, I'd like to give our listeners an overview of your work. Vesna Kittleson's diverse body of work is deeply autobiographical. Her recent installations, inspired by her childhood in Split, Croatia, evokes the city's ancient ruins. Color-filled paintings from her University of Minnesota days captures memories through abstraction. She delves into the emotional with war paintings reflecting the Balkan conflict and 9/11. In Cambridge, England, her botanical watercolors pay homage to Emma Darwin and later becomes Mrs. Darwin's Garden, Book 4. Her large paper sculptures are vibrant expressions of personal reflection. Dynamic cutout portraits of her students reveal her connection to fellow immigrant artists. Through various mediums, Vesna's art resonates with her deep connection to the everyday worlds that ignite her imagination. Vesna, your artwork draws from such diverse sources of inspiration, from your childhood memories in Croatia to your experiences in the U.S. Can you share a bit how these personal connections influence your creative process?
Yes. I mean, you have done a beautiful introduction, and I just can add details, really, because you have done it so very well. But okay, so my mind is made so that it is interested in creativity. In that sense, I don't recognize any borders. I am interested in African art, in Native American art, equally as I am interested in, you know, our European Western culture art, mm-hmm. like Velázquez or Caravaggio or Monet or Manet. All is in the game for me, you know. I stand in front of something and I see it with my mind, the way I can take something from it that goes into my mind and cooks in there, mm-hmm. so to speak, and it is somehow back on the surfaces that I use for creating my piece. You know, for example, when I first came to the United States, this was the first time I saw Africans' carved faces like masks. And I love it so much, I bought them. You know, I have a collection of it. I wasn't really thinking of this is my culture or not my culture. The world is mine and beyond the world if I want it, you know. Mm-hmm. And because I admire it, I'm not using it or looking at it or buying it because I contempt it. I love it. And I think that an artist in Africa or India or North Africa is going through the same similar processes that we are here. You know, when you're creating, you're creating. It's all open and it is what you know. It is about that which you feel.
Yes.
So that's why I am using all of the sources, meaning anything that I come upon that spoke to me is incorporated somewhere in my mind and it comes out in a different shape and different form, but meaning of creativity as, mm-hmm. as I think we all share. We are artists and yes. we share that drive for creativity. And yes. whatever comes out is really, really authentic then, you know.
Yes, yes. I've often said that art goes beyond nation, borders, culture, time, gender.
Exactly, exactly. That yeah. is what I'm talking about.
Yes.
I mean, you know, if I go to Japan and I see some art, it's not my fault. I see it, you know.
Exactly.
It's a matter of fault. It's a matter of seeking connection with the culture that you are looking at in a piece of work.
Yes, yes. You know,
because we carry all of that. And so as I am an international citizen, I am open to anything. Mm-hmm. You know, to be honest with you, podcast is part of it. You know, this is an experience now.
Yes.
It's going to affect me. I don't know how, we will never know, but we are doing something.
Yes, yes. You could say this is a real-time collaboration.
Yeah, you can say that, exactly.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Actually, podcasting for me is portrait painting. I don't use yeah. paint, I use words, and you are the portrait that reveals itself, as
yes.
you've done yeah, through your work, and now
yes.
you.
That's what I'm talking about. So everything that you're experiencing can be part of who you are in some way.
Yes, yes.
It's not defined, but it is part of something that you are.
Yes.
Absolutely. I agree with you.
So in 1989, a key moment in the world, revolutions broke apart communist rule in Central and Eastern Europe, including the fall of the Berlin Wall. How did these events affect you?
Fill to Capacity is brought to you by one of the most celebrated persons in history, Joan of Arc. How about carrying a bit of Joan's courage with you all the time? You can with the Joan of Arc Scroll Medal designed by award-winning artist Pat Benincasa. With loving attention to detail, Joan has banner in hand and is charging off the scroll-shaped medal with the words, "Be at my side." This beautiful brass alloy medal is ideal for holiday or special occasion gifts. Don't wait. Capture a bit of history and inspiration today. Visit www.patbenincasa-art.com. Now, back to the podcast.
Enormously. You know, first of all, I had these wonderfully intelligent parents to just mention that I was very influenced by how they saw life in communism as a child, you know, and as a grown-up person as well. And it was a very much their dream come true. But the Berlin Wall coming down was a very big symbol of things in Russia being sort of thump-thump crash in 10 minutes. Whoever ever thought of that? We thought it was forever, eternal. In the end, it just showed itself how empty and fragile that system was and how quickly it disappeared. And it disappeared from our conversations around the table here in our dining room with our friends. We used to mention Russia occasionally or Soviet Union and then didn't.
Yeah.
It was gone. Was there to mention?
Yes, and, yes.
And so I was so affected that I took a part of my grant to go and see the Berlin Wall. I was never, ever there before, but I went to see where it all happened, where it was the most relevant that it happened. And at that time, I have to confess, we were not thinking that the war would happen to us. Yeah. And that war happened to us as a some degree of consequence of crashing of Soviet Union. Croatia was, as you mentioned initially, free of influence of Russia directly, but indirectly it was Serbia. And Serbia is their satellite. So we were, of course, living this communism through particularly rule of Serbia. And all of a sudden the question was now what will happen? But nobody was thinking of war.
Yeah,
I have to say, you know, war is an extreme circumstance, and I was never thinking that that would happen.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how it affected me a lot.
Yes.
I had traveled to Germany to see where, you know, that symbolic line was and to see the people. And I actually did experience some moments where individuals were still in East Germany sort of hanging on to that system because that's all they knew.
Yeah.
You know, where would a young person have such an open mind about this, thinking this would be fantastic? No, yeah. You know, they were scared.
Yeah, I'd like to go in a different direction about places where you live. You live in Minneapolis, Croatia, mm-hmm. and Cambridge. And again, you are that tri-located citizen of the world. I want to know, how do you manage the logistics and emotional aspects of living in three different countries?
You know, that is really sort of significant experience, actually, because these are three completely different cultures from each other.
Yeah.
Now, most people would find it maybe somewhat perplexing, at least, But I am that type that likes that. So when I'm in England, England and Cambridge offer that which doesn't exist in Minneapolis or in Split. When you're in Split, in Croatia, that is an offer that doesn't exist in England or United States. When I'm in Minneapolis in America, then I have experiences that don't exist in the other two. So what I do is I focus on it and I take what is the best. What I think nurturing for me, I don't know if it's the best for everyone, but what's nurturing for me, I like the differences. And that actually helped me also learn the difference between criticism and critical thinking. I think that there is a difference. Criticism can be just personal rambling about something that you don't agree with. But criticism means understanding what is behind it. Critical thinking, I mean. In art, that was very important to me, to learn about critical thinking. I think rather than, you know, when we were young, we would do criticism. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that that is as deep as critical thinking. Like, why am I doing this work? What does this work tell me? Those are super hard questions.
Yes.
But it is good to come to that point where you can ask them. You know.
And do you think this tripartite of countries, it gives you a different worldview as opposed to staying in one place?
Yes, they are completely different. And different means difference in architecture, for example. Mm-hmm. I mean, Split is an ancient city in Croatia that started during Roman times.
Yes.
Cambridge is started somewhere around the 1400s, and it is meant to be a scholarly place. So it's the books and research and experimentation, which is wonderful. And then Minneapolis is a new city. I love that it is new and that we, you and I and other artists can have an input and an impact in how it's shaping culturally. These are big words for such small possibilities for us. But that is what we are doing. Artists have also their own stamp on place.
Yes.
And we are in a new culture. This is only like 200-year-old city compared to one that I come from in Split or Cambridge. Mm-hmm. And so we know that the new means a new vibrancy, new courage. I feel like I can do any kind of work that nobody would stop me because it's all open, real new. So these are the three things that are, I think, scholarly Cambridge, and then ancient Split, and then new Minneapolis have offered me to expand my thoughts and expand my, I think, courage.
Yes, yes.
To do work.
As you were speaking, I had this image of you as time traveler. Now, I've been focused on the placeness of your life, but you're also a time traveler. You go from the time of Diocletian in Split, Roman times, and all of that antiquity to Cambridge, the medieval structures and the scholarship, and then fast forward to Minneapolis. There is a fluidity in time travel that you entertain and allow. So it's not just that you're in the three places, you're also in three different time sequences. It's like you're not bound by linear time.
No, the linear thinking and linear time is just not my thing, to be honest.
Vesna, I think we see that. Yes.
I go vertically and horizontally, you know, and I think that is one specificity of artists who are feminist artists.
Yes.
That you go in layers, you don't go just linearly. And linear is important because you feel that you are moving within your time. I mean, that's important. But the way we think is an analysis in layers. So linear and vertical for me.
That's,
I carry everything.
I know
don't
you do.
Go away.
Yeah. I want to go deeper into time. Nina Simone, for those of you who may not know who Nina Simone is, was an American singer, songwriter, pianist, composer, and civil rights activist. Nina Simone said, quote, "It's an artist's duty to reflect the times in which we live." Now, artists often serve as a mirror to society, capturing the zeitgeist, the spirit of the time. Whether intentional or not, their work speaks volumes about the era they live in. What would your work say about the time and places that you've lived, Vesna?
I think, for example, maybe I should mention my very most current work I'm doing. So what I want to do is say that I believe that language is the most important historic aspect of civilization. That is when we started communicating and learning and developing language a million years ago. But that is very present today. For example, you and I are now communicating with words. So I'm making the word that's called words, and then equal sign, mathematical equal sign, beyond measure. Why am I saying that? It's because the words cannot be measured by three systems of measurement that we have in their content. We cannot measure the content. So it is beyond words, what we mean and what we want to see and how we function. It's more than words can describe. And because words cannot be measured, I thought I would make the work that is about image of a dictionary and words leaving the dictionary, and then they cannot be put under any kind of time, under any kilograms, under any miles and kilometers. Mm-hmm. They cannot be used to capture the word. So what am I doing here? I'm using language, which is the oldest form in human communication, with the new idea of these measurements that we use to measure Mars, sea waves, the buildings, Eiffel Tower. We can measure all that, but we cannot measure content of words. So I am doing something that is a new thought. It's mine. And who knows, maybe I'll be killed for it. I don't know, by critics. But a language, on the other hand, and words is old.
Yes.
And that goes for all languages, and there are many more than 200.
What's interesting about that is that we live in a culture that measures everything. Everything is quantified. Everything has a value assigned to it.
Yes.
And when you're speaking, I can't help but think that you are talking about the ineffable, the mystery, that you allow for the mystery to come into this discussion about word.
Yes. So here we are. We are using this language as a tool to communicate, but we have inside of ourselves a lot more that words cannot describe. They cannot be measured in content. I mean, we have eye contact. You were saying that we will do a Zoom because we want to see each other. You see, why is that? In addition to pronouncing words and reading meaning, we also want to see each other's face if possible.
Yes.
Not always possible.
You know, in this discussion, it reminds me of one of the first linguists, at least in Western civilization, Dante Alighieri.
Oh, yeah.
And in the 1300s, when he wrote the Divine Comedy in the Tuscan vernacular, I was surprised to learn that he went from region to region and to cities. And he jotted notes about the dialects. He was somebody who knew the power of language as a cultural identity. This awareness of dialect, these nuances of being by place, locality, and region. And what you're doing, it's almost like you're like the sock in the dryer. When you pull it out, it's inside out. You're taking verbal language and turning it inside out.
Yes.
Which I think is fascinating.
Yes. And why do I even come upon this? Because as an immigrant, and you know, a few years ago, I was getting older and thinking about, so what am I? It turned out that I think that I still remain an immigrant wherever I am. That is really my condition. In Croatia, I feel like I am an American. In America, I feel like I'm European. In Cambridge, I feel like I'm American or Croatian. I mean, it's crazy. I felt like I had to figure out what then would I identify with. And it would be a dictionary. Dictionary would be sum total of an immigrant's existence.
Yes.
That's what it is. So that is why I work with dictionaries. They describe all of us with that language.
Yes.
Educated or uneducated, it doesn't matter. All the words that we use are in a dictionary. So that is for me sort of an identity card, really.
Yes. You
know, a dictionary. I am an immigrant in the end, even though I am happy with living here and living in Cambridge. I remain an outsider to some degree. And you don't think about this, especially because I am so interested in fitting in wherever I am. It doesn't matter. But, you know, when it is sort of sum total of you, what would it be? It would be a dictionary mm-hmm. for me because I remain an immigrant.
Yes.
And it's not a painful thing. It's a happy thing.
Yes.
I think being an immigrant, if, you know, I'm not down and out and as an immigrant, but an educated one, that's always wonderful, you know.
Yes,
but
yes.
I would live in any culture, it would be okay.
But you really highlight the immigrant dilemma. How can I fit in? How can I remember who I am? Mm-hmm. How can I honor who I am?
So I had to face some surgeries and I was just thinking about, you know, what is the sum total of my identity, and my identity would be really the dictionary.
Yeah.
Because that's how I started. And you're never done with the dictionary, you know.
No.
There's thousands of words. English, for example, is a very big, strong language. It's incredible. It's incredible. It's
yes.
good and bad.
Well, having been raised by immigrants, my parents learned to speak flawless English. But most of my relatives spoke broken English, Italian mm-hmm. and broken English.
Yes.
And I was always marveling at the words they would invent.
Yes, really, I do too. I do too.
You understand what I'm talking about. There were
yes.
words that were
yes.
so inventive.
Yes.
They would make nouns verbs, or they would turn things around. And it was delightful because there was nothing in English like
yes.
that.
Yes. You know, I was told many times, oh, I never heard of that word. And of course, mine. Especially in earlier years.
Yes.
I would make it up. Yes.
So
yeah.
the combination of words in your work now, in addition to the visual, in addition to the image, seems like such a rich pathway.
Yes. I have to say that I think due to our time, which is a mix of absolutely everything. If you want to be positive, you
yep.
would say it's really a wonderful mix of everything. Is also allowing artists to work any which way. I don't have to work like formal 19th century oil painter. Nobody's asking me to do that. And
yep.
as you know, I did Young Americans, which is cutout
yes.
portraits. That was really connected more with African masks than it was with the Western way of presenting art. But I liked very much that I could do a cutout and put this portrait on the wall and have a very direct relationship or response to it as a viewer. So, for example, that is a standard or thought that I wanted to fulfill, which was a contemporary one.
Yes.
It's not really something I learned in school, or that there was a book about it or anything like that. You make your own. And you know, I have to this day mixed techniques. And often people say, wow, what are all these techniques? Anything that's on my table, I grab and I use. I have come to that point that where I think that the first artist was person on the beach that picked up a stick and drew a line in the sand. I can come to that point where I work with anything that's around me.
Yes.
I am okay. And our time allows for that. We don't
yes.
have to work formally like 19th century artists, 18th century artists, or anything like that. We can be inventive using anything at all as a technique.
Yes.
I have many techniques. I don't even want to talk about them because it takes 10 minutes to say all that I used in my piece, you know.
But it's so much more than the material and the technique.
Yes.
Your work, your work is always multifaceted, multi-layered. What you see is not what you get. You see it, but there's so, as you stare at it, there's so many layers to it.
Yeah. And I can see that because when somebody looks at it, it's different things that they notice from somebody before or somebody after them. And that is interesting too.
Yes.
Because people carry some curiosity in themselves about certain technique and they see it and they talk about that. But there are many more.
Yes,
know?
Yes. The finished piece has the alchemy of what the viewer brings to it, their joys, their sorrows, their interpretations. Yeah. So the pieces keep reinventing themselves.
Yes, they do.
That's the power of art.
And what I don't want is to have finished work to full stop, to period. Because I think openness allows me for more things to come in like clouds do in the sky. I don't mean negatively, but like travel, you know, there are more things allowing themselves to enter my work. And at this point, when I say allowing themselves to come into my work, it's more like I follow my work. I don't tell my work what to be. You know, it tells me what it needs and I have to figure it out. And so it is a conversation between us rather than me beating my work into certain work. Mm-hmm. I don't do that. That you do at first when you're in school because maybe you get an assignment and you have to look like it should be, like you were told. But, you know, we're far from that. We just allow thought and a lot of new experimental moves are much more interesting to me than having a definition that is, you know, written in stone. It's not.
Yeah.
Art is open for me. It's always open mind, open door, open influence. I don't care. Open.
As we come to the end of the hour, I think that our discussion today has really centered on the meaning of place. Place as a concept reflects the essence of your artistry. In the tangible world, it's like geography's precise coordinates of longitude and latitude, the canvas where your creative vision comes to life. Yet, in the ethereal realm of spirit, place transforms into a metaphysical tapestry. It weaves together the threads of memory, culture, and emotion. It echoes the laughter in old cafes. It carries the scent of fresh rain on paved walkways and cradles the timeless secrets of generations. Here, place transcends mere coordinates. It emerges as the sanctuary of the heart and becomes a vivid reflection in your artistic journey, Vesna Kittleson.
Yes, thank you so much. It is fantastic presentation on your part. I am so impressed. Really. I mean, this is kind of all of me was in this interview. And that is interesting. It's not that I'm hearing my words coming out of my mouth. I am all into it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really thanks to you. And you're very poetic about presenting art. I love that. I really commend you for that.
Thank you.
That you have done this interview as an artist.
Vesna, we're artists. We're nothing else. Right?
Yes, I think that is one of the best.
Yes. Well, Vesna, thank you for joining us today and sharing this wonderful world in your head, your work, your outlooks, your insights. What an honor having you here today. Thank you so much.
Same with you. I really appreciate you very much. Thank you, Pat.
And thank you, listeners. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please hit subscribe and tell your friends. Thank you and bye.